Welcome to the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections Oral History Project, where we are recording the oral histories of individuals who are involved in an important DOC event. I'm DOC Communications Director Susan McNaughton. This oral history focuses on memories from the October 1989 riot at the State Correctional Institution at Camp Hill. Our guest today, September 19th, 2019, is Dave Warren, who was with the Lower Allen Township Fire Department at the time of the riot. Thank you for joining us, Dave.
You're welcome.
All right, Dave, so it's 2:33 p.m. on Wednesday, October 25th, 1989. Where are you and what was your involvement in the riot?
So I was, I worked night shift at that time for a capillary transit as a bus mechanic, and I woke up being dispatched to an incident at that time we called SCIC, which stands for State Correctional Institution Camp Hill. So I responded and got there and found out there was some sort of fight that was involved, and as it escalated, we found out later that the inmates had taken over a good part of the institution, and things were actually starting to escalate and burn. So at that time, I was an officer of the fire company of Lower Allen Township, which is our first due district. At that time, I was a lieutenant, and was met by police officers and several other folks, and we truly weren't allowed to gain entrance to the institution because of what was going on there. So for several hours, we were just sort of in a standby mode and being taken in to do what was needed, along with the PSP and local law enforcement. So we really, the first day, we really didn't have a lot of involvement there. After the inmates were returned, back to their cells or to the modular housing units at that time, then we were taken in and put out a lot of the fires. Mm-hmm. The second night is when it really got bad there. I actually, again, met there and was at the front gate and found out that the inmates were one gate away from taking over the control center. So I met with several PSP officers, and we devised a plan to get these folks out of the control center, which would have been the building directly behind the main gate on the right side, sort of to where the flagpoles are today.
Right.
And what we did then is there were several firefighters with me, so the police officers at that time basically took off their ID. Two of them went in with us. We put a ladder up, pulled an air conditioner out of a window. We stuck a water cannon in the door, so anybody that was coming and going inside that door would have been hit with a severe amount of water to deter any action that we were trying to help do. So as we got up the ladder and we removed the air conditioner, one of us crawled in, and there were several people inside the control center that needed help to get out. And we basically brought them down the ladder, took them to the front gate entrance where they were removed safely, and ironically, no one was hurt or injured through that. And one of the last persons I remember bringing down was a major at that time of the guards. His name was Major Stover, if I'm not mistaken.
Stover, uh-huh.
Yeah. So I remember bringing him down, and he was sort of scared. Didn't really want to come down the ladder. We actually brought him down head first, which was sort of unique. So as we did that, then we disconnected our water line to the hydrant, sort of left the hose lay there because it was getting dangerous. They were throwing things at us, and the police officers sort of were our backup to help us, and then we got out. And I actually pulled that move off without the fire chief at the time gave me a direct order not to even go in there, but I figured, well, I got to get these people out of here, or they're going to get hurt or killed. So that was one of the things that I was directly involved with.
Wow. Wow. So you placed your life in danger to go in and help people whose lives were potentially in danger.
Yes.
Now,
mm-hmm.
Wow. So did you have any, like, military background or law enforcement background, or is it just your firefighter background that was like, I've got to get in there and help get these people out? Like, what drove you?
Just firefighter background.
Okay.
I've been a firefighter for about 40 years, and to this day, I'm still the president of the Fire Chiefs Association here in Cumberland County.
Okay.
So
once these people got out, then what happened?
We basically backed out to the front gate and regrouped, figured out where these folks needed to go, whether they needed to be checked out medically or what. We took a went in with us to make sure everybody got back out safely. And then sort of stood down for a few minutes. And then basically that's when things really got bad. They were taking over and burning things. And then we regrouped and went back in with another group of officers, law enforcement. And we were trying to take control of different areas. There's modular housing units that they had built. They had several of those on fire at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And we were basically trying to put those out, which was a futile attempt because the flames were just too large and we didn't have enough manpower or enough equipment to do that. Mm-hmm. So it was decided that since no lives were in jeopardy, just to leave them burn and then come back later to try to put them out. Then we got to the what would have been the commissary slash furniture factory area, and I was met with a police officer from state police. His name is Major Hazen. I remember him very well. And they had a gate that was controlled, barricaded actually, with a lot of debris, and they had some corrections officers on the other side of that gate that we were trying to either find out if they were okay or to get them back to safety. The inmates actually had them as hostages. So we decided to use water cannons to try to knock some of the stuff down. Well, it was fortified too much that it actually, the water was bouncing and going straight up in the air. So that was a no-go on that. And then we met and regrouped, and it got to be around daybreak, and that's when they decided to take back control of the facility, which was done at daybreak with two helicopters dropping tear gas. And at the time, the major of the state police asked if I would crash that gate with our fire truck. And I said, well, the water cannon wouldn't knock it down. I'm sure I'm not going to be able to knock it down with a fire truck. So I said, but there is one outside the institution that the Commonwealth owns, which went by Air Guard 704, which is one of those large fire trucks that's used at the airport. So they brought that in, and that's when they crashed the gates at daybreak and dropped tear gas with two helicopters, and basically the inmates were running wild, and the order was given to fire at will. I still remember to this day, and I was sitting on the roof of the fire truck watching, and the guy was with me. I said, we'll never see this again as long as we're alive. And we sort of chuckled at each other, and it's people were being shot, people were being injured, people were being beat, people were being hit with objects that were thrown, and basically it took, I'm going to guess, probably less than an hour at that time for the state police to take over that area. And inmates were brought out, handcuffed, some hardly with any clothes on. They were using them plastic cable tie handcuffs, and they were lined up along the fences where they were guarded and then transported away from that area. And then we spent the better part of that day putting out fires and cleaning out salt blocks. So I was in there for about 72 hours. It was quite the adventure.
Wow. Wow. And what I find very interesting is that even 30 years later, your details are apparently very vivid to you because your description was just impeccable.
It was an incredible 3 days, and through the whole process, I wasn't really scared because I was with law enforcement the whole time, and you know they were armed, heavily armed, and if you stayed with them, you were safe. If you strayed from them, you know, you were sort of taking your own life. And the problem with SCIC at that time is it was a nice, they had the weather in their favor. There wasn't any rain, it wasn't real cold. You know, the weather that day was in the 70s, and even at night it was in the 50s, so it was like perfect situation for them.
Right. I was there and was watching out my office window, so I had the perfect vantage point of the compound area between the six cell blocks where most of this took place, but a lot of what you described took place on the other side of the barricades, which I couldn't see. So
yeah.
I've heard other people talk about what you're talking about, and I'm just amazed because I didn't see it, so it's an interesting vantage point. So I appreciate you for providing that. One thing I did want to mention was the Correctional Industries building just smoldered and smoldered for many days afterwards. So were you continually coming into the facility afterwards to just kind of surround and drown that, or?
Yeah, we would basically bring crews in and rotate them out, and we would leave fire trucks there, I think, for, if we call it a better part of a week. Putting out hot fire or spot fires and that, and then we'd rotate crews out and that type of thing. One of the things I remember is we would go in with these CERT teams, and they would clear areas for us, and then we would go in and put these fires out, and I remember operating the Bobcat, and then anything that we could push out into the corridors was pushed out, and then they had dumpsters for us to put it in.
Yes.
And that would help us to keep the items, you know, from burning.
Wow.
As I say, it's hard to burn concrete and steel with all the items, and it would burn fairly easily.
So did you say that you were operating one of the Bobcats pushing that stuff out?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I always presumed that that was just, you know, our DOC staff doing that. I know that they were involved in cleaning out the cells and dumping the stuff into the center of the cell blocks, and then it was pushed out. But so you were driving one of those Bobcats?
Yeah, I was a bus mechanic for 33 years, so I knew how to operate heavy equipment.
Okay, so let's talk about afterwards when things are finally over. Did your experience affect you in any way? Did you have nightmares or anything like that afterwards?
No. There was a lot of... the fire service has a lot of camaraderie in it, and there was probably four departments. I'm going to guess there were probably nine counties there at least. So, you know, so there was a lot of exchanging of stories, a lot of exchanging of pictures. At that time, you know, camcorders were popular, not like they are with digital cameras today. So it was, there was a lot of photographs that were taken and that shouldn't have been, and there was a lot of things. I still have a live round that I kept as a souvenir. It was out of a 12-gauge shotgun that I found laying on the ground, and I still have it to this day that I kept as a souvenir. And it's, it was a traumatic experience for some. What you saw, you never think you'd ever see again, and truly hope nobody ever experiences that. They were actually, if I recall, like one gate away from getting out of that place, which would have been down where the power plant is today. And if they would have got through that gate, it would have been mass chaos, because you'd have people outside. I don't really know what would have happened then. But
right. So
there would have been a lot of people running like ants, I think.
Right. Tell me about the wear and tear on the fire department's equipment. How did it impact your fire department?
We had a lot of equipment that was damaged. It was irreplaceable. Nothing large. It was all small equipment. Turnout gear was damaged. Hoses, you know, breathing apparatus, you know, that type of thing. A lot of it was replaced by insurance. We spent countless hours figuring out who lost time at work so we could get reimbursed. There were various funds that were set up for that. I can recall being reimbursed for probably 24-28 hours in the job that I worked for, you know, loss of wages.
Wow. Yeah,
so
I mean, people don't really think about that.
It was extensive to figure out the amount of manpower equated into hours, and the hours equated into dollars. And, you know, and it's like, you know, everybody that was there for the most part in the volunteer fire service was volunteer except for Harrisburg City and the airport. So you're talking probably hundreds, if not thousands, of volunteer firefighters who gave up, you know, days of their lives to, you know, to participate in that. So it was
Have you ever experienced anything on that scale ever since?
No. Large fires, yes, but nothing like that where you have multi-agencies being involved. But there was a lot of lessons that were learned from that. Some we still came through today. They have what they call NIMS, which is a National Incident Management System, and it became nationwide.
Right.
And, you know, we've all had extensive training in it, and, you know, there's different phases that you go through now, but at least they've learned how to do that. The one fault that we always had there with that was cell phone. phones aren't like they are today, where you can, you know, basically have them all over the place. You had the big heavy bag phones plus the portable ones, but radio communication was poor back then. So to communicate with a police officer that might have been 10 feet from me was difficult at best.
Wow. Amazing.
You know, everybody was on a different frequency, and you know, the state, the Commonwealth, has spent millions of dollars trying to have a statewide radio system, and I don't think it works to this day, but everybody's tried and everybody's failed.
Yeah. So what's your Lower Allen Township Fire Department's relationship like now with the prison? Do you go over there for drills? Have you been in there since they've, you know, renovated it? I mean, obviously it's much different than it was back in 1989.
Yeah, they do periodic exercises in there. I think they just had one recently, a mass casualty incident with law enforcement and the fire department. So they do training. We would periodically, and I can remember going in with our tower truck, and we did get to learn about the institution, and, you know, after it was rebuilt, we had several tours of the facility, you know, to learn what's changed. I don't think whatever happened back in 1989 could ever happen again, but that's the old adage, what if.
Right. Wow. Is there anything else that you recall that you want to share before we close this interview?
No, I think looking on it back then, a lot of it had to do with, you know, the inmates were bored. You know, there weren't enough jobs, there weren't enough things for them to do, and they just got bored. When you get bored, you sit around and you try to figure out what you can do to disrupt things, and they certainly did.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, Dave.
I do remember Major Jim Hazen. Ran that for PSB. He was the incident commander, and he was an old smart kind of guy. You know, he sort of figured out what he needed to do, and he took control.
Okay, your phone was kind of going in and out of there. Did you say the incident commander, Glenn Walp?
No, Jim Hazen. Hazen of the Pennsylvania State Police. He was a major at the time.
Right.
He's retired by now. He's liable to even be deceased, but I remember him very well.
He's still around, but he
is that right?
He doesn't want to do any interviews on it, so...
Well,
I did try to.
I don't blame them.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there are things that I saw that you just don't talk about.
Right.
You know, when you shoot somebody, you know, they don't obviously get up and run from it.
Right. Mm. Dave, thanks for taking time with us to share your recollections of this important time in our DOC history. We appreciate your participation.
You're welcome.